Talking about Jonah's prayer this morning, and we talked a little bit last week out of Jonah chapter 1 that this isn't just one of those little cutesy stories that we tell little kids, and that we don't really know that it was a whale that swallowed Jonah. The Bible says that it was a big fish, a large fish, and so we just kind of say, well, instead of calling it Jonah and the big fish, we'll call it Jonah and the whale. And so that's how most of us kind of know that story. And even if you've never been around Christianity, maybe you've at least heard references to that. And so this morning we're talking about Jonah. Now then, he is in the belly of this great fish or a whale. And so this is kind of where Jonah has gotten to. He has been running from God. He wanted to get away from God. God came to him and said, I want you to go to the city of Nineveh, which today would be present-day Iraq, especially the city of Mosul. And so the ruins of Nineveh are there. I wouldn't suggest going and touring that place at this point in time in history, but give it a few years, you might be able to go. But that's where the ruins are. And so instead of just saying no to God, Jonah takes it one step further. He doesn't even stay where he's at and say no to God. He travels down to Joppa, which is the port city there, what would be present-day Tel Aviv. He gets on a ship, and he goes to what we would consider Timbuktu. It was the furthest point that trading ships and things like that were going to, okay? So he goes to this place called Tarshish, which was like 2,500 miles away. Not only does Jonah say no to God, he like says, I don't know how it's going to happen. God's going to probably try to transport me, so I'm going to get as far away from that place as possible. And so he leaves everything, I mean everything, and goes down and tries to get on the ship and take off. God sends a storm his way. The sailors are trying to figure out what's going on. Jonah is down in the hold of the ship, down at the bottom of the ship, and the captain comes down and says, don't you have a God that you could cry out to and help save us? And so Jonah comes up to the top and he says, hey guys, it's really all my fault. And they were like, what do we need to do? And he says, throw me overboard. And they're like, whoa, whoa, wait a second. I mean, this may be a terrible storm, but we're not killing anybody. And then finally the storm gets so bad that the sailors were like, sorry, dude, you're going. So they throw him overboard and then they cry out to God and say, God, we didn't want to throw the guy overboard, but it's obviously his fault. Please don't judge us for throwing him overboard. And just as soon as they throw him overboard, it is calm, and Jonah sinks to the bottom. As he's sinking to the bottom, a whale gets him, or a great fish gets him, we say a whale. And Jonah chapter 2, this is what happens after all of that. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from inside the fish. He said, I cried out to the Lord in my great trouble, and he answered me. I called to you from the world of the dead, and Lord, you heard me. You threw me into the ocean depths, and I sink down to the heart of the sea. I was buried beneath your wild and stormy waves. Then I said, O Lord, you have driven me from your presence. How will I ever again see your holy temple? I sank beneath the waves, and death was very near. The waters closed in around me, and seaweed wrapped itself around my head. I sank down to the very roots of the mountains. I was locked out of life and imprisoned in the land of the dead. But you, O Lord, my God, have snatched me from the yawning jaws of death. When I had lost all hope, I turned my thoughts once more to the Lord, and my earnest prayer went out to you in your holy temple. Those who worship false gods turn their backs on all of God's mercies. But I will offer sacrifices to you with songs of praise, and I will fulfill all my vows, for my salvation comes from the Lord alone. Then the Lord ordered the fish to spit up Jonah on the beach, and it did. I think we've all come to maybe a time in our life where even if we weren't too sure about God, that we prayed a prayer. That it was some probably out of a distressful situation. I remember reading about this little bitty church in a very small town, rural America. You know, you don't do anything around there without everybody's permission. And some guy decided to open up a bar right there in that town where there had never been a bar before. And the small church that was there, that pastor told his church, we don't need a bar in this town, and we're going to pray that bar right out of this town. And so that's what they began praying every Sunday, and pray the bar out of the town. And so they prayed and prayed and prayed, and one day, lightning struck the bar, and it burnt to the ground. And the church was so excited. They were so excited. Wow, look at what we did. The bar owner decided to sue the church. And he took it to court and told the judge, these people are at fault because they prayed for something to happen to my bar. It did. Lightning struck it, burnt to the ground. They are at fault. The pastor then comes before the judge and says, it's not our fault. We just prayed and God happened to do something. It's really not our fault. And the judge said, this is absolutely amazing. I've got a bar owner that believes in the power of prayer and a pastor who doesn't. This is absolutely uncanny. And you know something in our lives, it's sometimes kind of like that, where prayer is kind of the last resort. And while we may say we believe in prayer, when it really comes down to it, we may say, well, maybe not. Maybe it was just coincidence. Now, for all you Browns fans, last night couldn't have gone any better, could it? Right? If you watched the Steelers game, you were going, oh, man, this is wonderful. At the end of the game, they go down on a field goal. No way. I mean, it's just kind of like, and you know something in this story, while Jonah is being told to go to Nineveh, it would be like for someone from Cleveland being sent to Pittsburgh to tell those people to repent, you know, or they're going to get destroyed, you know. And you'd have to hug Steelers fans. I mean, you know, if that's not gross, I don't know what is, right? Okay, I'm just kidding, Steelers fans. Making sure you're all awake this morning. And here's Jonah, and he's refusing to go to Nineveh. And we talked about last week that certainly these were a brutal people. This was the Assyrian Empire, and we looked at a couple of quotes of some of the kings that said that they would go inside of these villages and they would skin these people alive and just do terribly brutal things to them. And while Jonah knows about all that stuff and he knows that they're brutal people, it's probably really not fear as much as it was he hated them so much that he didn't want to see God do anything with them. He despised them so much and he hated them so much that it was like, I don't want them to turn to God, so I'm just not going. And I think we've all been there where God's asked us to do something or he's impressed upon us to do something. We're like, I'm not doing that. That's tough. And so as much as Jonah gets beat up for being this guy that refused to go to Nineveh and gets swallowed by this giant fish, you know, there's, as we talked about last week, there's a Jonah in all of us that runs from God, that God begins to speak to us and say, why don't you do this or do that? We've had a pretty trying week with our little one, Josiah. Last week, you know, we were thinking everything was all good in the world and things were so much better. And when I got home, Sherry was in tears. And I was like, oh no, is this one of those emotional moments? Is this, you know, kind of that postpartum thing? You know, I mean, guys, you learn to kind of, you know, gauge what's going on here. I was like, what is going on? She's like, he's been screaming the whole time. And I'm like, oh man, you know, what's going on? And I thought, well, you know, sometimes this happens. And those of you who are married, you know this, when the husband leaves, what happens? You know, everything breaks, everything falls apart. The kids go crazy. All right, it's just that way. And I've heard it from woman after woman after woman. It tells you, if the man leaves for out of town, everything will be going great. And then everything breaks, everything falls apart, and the kids go nuts. I mean, it's just the way that it is. They're just terrors, you know, little terrors running around. And I thought, well, maybe that's what it is. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. We rang in the new year, but it wasn't with a joyous occasion. It was with a screaming kid. And we had bought little shrimp and all this other little stuff because we thought, you know, Sherry and I'll have kind of this little 10, 15 minutes of celebration in the new year. I ate my shrimp 4 o'clock in the afternoon the next day, if that tells you anything. There was no celebration. It was like, if we got anything to eat, well, there's the shrimp in there. Well, good, I'll eat that, you know, and that'll make me at least somewhat happy. And we just had a tough, tough time and had to go to the pediatrician again. And she looked at us and said, you know, maybe he has an allergic reaction to corn syrup. And you know, you've tried the breast milk and everything, and he couldn't handle that, which is unheard of. And now that we're at all these formulas, and she said, the only one that doesn't have corn syrup as its sweetener is the ready-to-feed Alimentum stuff. And I was like, oh. And she goes, yeah, you've got a golden child here. That stuff, in a case, per quart is $7 a quart. And I was like, oh man, how long is this going to go? And she goes, typically it's gone by month three. And I was like, yeah, typically. Well, typically it doesn't start till week three. We got it day three, so don't tell me about typically. And the coolest thing happened, and our pediatrician looked at us while he's screaming, okay? So we're yelling over the top of him. Those of you who are parents, you know exactly what I'm talking about. We're yelling over the top of him as we're at the office visit on January the 2nd because they weren't opened on New Year's Day or else we would have been there that day. And she said, you know, sometimes in medicine and everything else, we just really have no answers, but we can pray. And so it was really cool that we've got this pediatrician that knows that sometimes with everything else that you can try, prayer is always there. And so we bowed our heads right there in the office, and I said a prayer, and the pediatrician said a prayer over Josiah. And you know, even in that instance, I noticed in my own life that prayer was kind of becoming a last resort instead of being the first thing that we turned to. The first thing that we turned to was probably, well, you know, let's switch to a formula, or well, let's go see the doctor. And I'm not saying that prayer just, boom, oh, you pray and everything is right with the world, but maybe that should have been the first thing, you know. And our pediatrician, I think God gave her some wisdom about, you know, the formulas, and I've had other doctors go, wow, I didn't even know that. And there's only one formula that doesn't have corn syrup as its sweetener, and so she said, try this, and the last 72 hours have been great. Now then, I am praying that when I go home today, we're not right back where we were. When I left, perfect peace. It was a great Polaroid moment, okay? Great Kodak moment. And the fact that he was all balled up on Sherry, because he likes to do that. And Harmony, our little dog, was cradled around Sherry's head, and Sherry was asleep there on the chair. And I was like, man, this is peace, you know, this is what it's like. But I look back upon that and I go, you know, I only went to kind of prayer when it got really bad. And I wonder if that's not where you live sometimes. That not until it gets really bad do we suddenly turn to God. Do we suddenly say, okay, God, what is it that's going on in my life? Some of you are in some really dark moments right now. Some of you have shared those moments with me. And others of you will probably go through those dark moments. Maybe you've just come out of one. And the question that I think that I want to pose for all of us this morning is this. What does it take in order to get you to pray? What does it take in order to get me to pray? Is that where I go first? Is that where you go first? Or is that when all of the other options have been explored, then you go to prayer? And I would submit to you that sometimes the reason why we go through these storms, and sometimes as some of you may be in the belly of the well right now, you know, as a symbol, sometimes God has to take you there in order for you to finally pray. And I don't want to beat up Jonah here and say, well, looky there, you know, he should have, you know, prayed from the beginning and he should have followed God from the beginning. But you know, all of us have probably got things in our lives right now that we're running from. That God has so clearly told us, and we know in our heart, this is not the right thing to do, but we're going to do it anyway. And then we wonder why these storms come about. And I would also submit to you this morning that just because you're perfectly obedient doesn't mean that you get immune to storms. You do understand that, right? You don't get a get out of jail pass, you know, $200 collect, you know, like on the Monopoly board. You don't get that little card just because you're perfectly obedient to God. But I can tell you, when God keeps coming to you and trying to implore you, this is the right way. I know you may not like it, but this is the right way. This is the way to go. You keep pushing away, keep pushing away, keep pushing away, and God will send a storm. Not because he's mean, but because he loves you and because he wants to draw you in closer. I want you to look at a couple of things here. This word just kind of keeps coming back with Jonah. The word down, D-O-W-N, the word down. And I don't know if you noticed it or not in chapter 1 and chapter 2, but that word keeps coming up, and that symbol keeps coming up, and that direction keeps coming up. Where, how did he go to Joppa? It says he went down to Joppa. And then later on, the storm comes, and what does he do? he goes down into the hold of the ship. I mean, he's trying to get as far away from God as what he possibly can. Everybody else is on deck trying to save themselves, but Jonah, no, he goes down. And then it says that he gets tossed into the sea, and where does he go? Down. And then it doesn't get any lower than to know that a whale or a great fish swallows you. It doesn't get any worse than that. I mean, and there's no way to spin it to say, well, inside of there, I'm sure it wasn't that bad. I don't think God made it very comfortable. I don't think God said, you know, I'm not going to have you deal with the stomach acid of the great fish. I have an idea that Jonah experienced some pretty nasty, ugly things, and he kind of describes some of it. You know, he's like, man, I had seaweed around my head and around my neck, and it couldn't get any worse. And just when I thought it couldn't get any worse, wouldn't you know it, a great fish swallows me. I mean, it doesn't get any worse than that. And so he's doing a tour of the Mediterranean Sea, but yet he can see absolutely nothing. Completely dark, nasty, gross. I'm sure he's watching everything that the great fish is swallowing and eating. It is not a pretty picture. And for some of you in this room, maybe that's where you're at. You've kind of run from God. You've kind of pushed God back. Or maybe you haven't even pushed God back, but boy, you just are, this is a tough struggle in life. And it's dark days, and there just seems to be no glimmer of hope. And just when you think you're coming out of it, you go right back in, and you think, how can it get any worse than this? And it does. And you struggle. Here's the great news this morning. This is your GPS, your good practical stuff for this morning. God answers prayer even when we're disobedient. God answers prayer even when we're disobedient. That's the great news in this story, is not that God's being a big meanie, you know, that he's out to make Jonah miserable. Jonah made himself miserable. He could have chosen to follow God immediately, and instead he said, no, I'm not doing that. For some of you in this room, God's calling you into a closer relationship with him, but the closer you get to him, the more you realize there has to be a little bit of life change, and you're like, I don't think I like that. We've talked in previous messages about the buffet style of Christianity, you know, where we begin to say, I like this about God, and I love that he's loving, I love that he's merciful, I love that he's gracious, and always a kind God, and I want all those virtues in my life. But then when he asks us to make life change, we're like, well, now I think he'd be okay with me not doing that. And I want you to know that he's not okay with that. He's not okay with it in my life. He's not going to be okay with it in your life. He wasn't okay with it in Jonah's life. And he's going to ask you to make life change. We don't like that, and we begin to push away. We begin to say, you know something? I'm kind of good with the way things are with my relationship with God. I think I'll just be okay the way that I am. And I want you to know, there's a lot of people that will love to get close to God, who's loving and gracious and kind and merciful and all those other things, but they don't want to know that God has some hard and fast things that he's going to speak to us about. And he's going to begin to ask us to make life change. And then I've seen those very people who struggle against God, and then ultimately they just run. I mean, they just run from God. Anything they can do, they run. I told you last week, I believe it was last week, I've had so little sleep this week, I'll have to apologize to you. But I think it was last week I was talking about, you know, I felt like God was impressing upon my heart that in the eighth grade, that God was telling me, you know, that God was asking me to be a part of the ministry. And at that point in time, man, I couldn't figure out what was going on. And I didn't like going to church, because every time I went to church, I felt bad. And I thought church was there to kind of make me feel a little bit better, but it kept making me feel worse. I thought, well, I don't want to go there. That always causes pain. And what God was doing was, is he was beginning to shape in my life this call. But the problem was, as I've told you before, I was the most shy kid in my youth group, which is saying a lot. We had 300 kids that came every week, not 300 kids that occasionally came. I'm talking about 300 students from 7th to 12th grade, and I was the shyest one of the entire group. And God called me to ministry, and I made that public, and I know what was happening behind the scenes later on. Didn't know it at the time. Adults were kind of getting together going, what is he going to do? I mean, we can't even carry on a conversation with him. He won't even hardly talk. He just kind of hangs out and he's kind of there, but he doesn't really do much. And I didn't know it at the time, but these adults were getting together going, I don't know, what do you think he's going to do? I don't see him going into this. He's got to be able to talk one day. And what God did was, and I've shared this story before, and this is kind of one of those Jonah moments, through your mom, which we hate, right? You've been there. Your mom tells you, you know, you ought to check this out, or you might consider dating this guy. Oh, no. Ooh, mom, icky. God has a way of speaking through our parents sometimes. Sometimes, okay? Parents don't think, yeah, all right, okay, all right. I know everybody's like, yeah, please, sometimes, not always, right? A lot, though, I will tell you, quite honestly. And my mom came to me when I was in 10th grade. She said, hey, at your high school, they have the best debate team, you know, usually in the state of Arkansas. You need to check that out. And I was like, public speaking? I don't think so. I mean, if you're very shy, and even if you're not shy, most people will tell you their number one fear is public speaking. They don't want to get up in front of a group because they're afraid that they're going to say something stupid or look stupid. And I don't blame them. I mean, anything can happen. Anything can go wrong, and we've seen those times when it has. And we've maybe even experienced those times. And I remember thinking, man, I got to get out of this, right? I mean, because when you're a teenager, your whole life is spent trying to figure out how you can get out of something, right? I mean, that's what we do. That's our whole life goal. And I remember thinking, how can I get out of this? And I remember reading on the piece of paper about debate that there was this thing called a prerequisite. If you've been to college, you know what that means. You have to take another course before you can take that one, right? So I read on there, and it says, if you want to take debate, your prerequisite is speech, you know, 101, basically. I was like, how can I twist that to my advantage? Okay, and being the brilliant person that I am and the rebellious person, and just like some of you have already figured it out and you know exactly what you'd do, I went to my mom and I said, I tell you what, I said, you know, I don't like getting up and talking. I can't really do all that stuff. I'll take debate my senior year. Alex hasn't taken speech at that point. When will Alex take speech? Alex will never take speech, because he's brilliant even as a sophomore in high school. Knowing that, what he will do is come home and go, oh, mom, it's my senior year, and you remember how I was going to take debate? They're telling me that I have to take speech, knowing that I will only have to give 6 speeches the entire year. I remember it because I looked it up. And that was my plan. I'm sitting in sophomore year. We're reading King Arthur. The English teacher, who was a Cajun from Louisiana, if you ever wonder, why is his English not that good? It's not just because I'm from Arkansas. It's because I had a Cajun woman from Louisiana teaching me English in Arkansas. I'm not kidding you. She had a strong Cajun accent. And she was in there, and she would speak to us, and she'd say, "Youngins, we're going to read today." This is exactly the way she talks. I'm not kidding you. If you go to any of the high school today, they will always have me mimic Miss Billingsley. She was there for 30 years as English debate teacher. And so we're reading through King Arthur. And if you're like me, I hated those days. Some of you probably loved literature and stuff. And you need to get saved or something. I don't know. It's something wrong with you. And so we were in there and reading through that thing. And I hated it every single day. We're reading through it. And she said, "Youngin, you're going to be King Arthur." I was like, whatever. You know, so we're reading through the book. You know, it's so... Finally, you know, the last day when you would finish the book and everybody would go... You know, and everybody do it together, and it's like, oh, we're done. I look over, I'm sitting right beside her desk, and I look over at her, and she is crying. Now, Miss B, that's what we would call her, Miss B is in her 60s at this point. And it goes quiet, because as teenagers, we can't handle a crying adult. That's freaky. You're not supposed to cry. Did we make you cry? Now then, if we yell at you and we make you cry, we're like, ha, you know. She's crying at the end of King Arthur, okay? And we're trying to figure out why. I'm closest to her. And I said, are you okay? And as she wiped away tears, she said, "Youngin, in my 26 years of being here, that's the best King Arthur I've ever had." And I'm like, man, you've had some really bad King Arthurs, because I could care less about being King Arthur. I did not read it with any type of gusto at all. And she looked over at me and she said, you're going to be in my debate class. I said, no, I'm not. She goes, you're going to be in my debate class. I said, no, I'm not. And she goes, why not? And I said, because you have to have speech, and I haven't had speech. She said, you read that on the prerequisite? And I said, yes, ma'am. Now, this is conversations going on. 30 people are witnessing this. I kid you not. I've got friends this day that will tell you they watched it happen. And I said, I'm not going to be in there. And she said, you read the prerequisite? And I said, yeah. And she goes, guess who wrote the prerequisite? I said, you did? She goes, that's right. You're going to be in my debate class. I said, I'm not signing up for your debate class. She goes, young'un, you know when you go down to the office and that says principal up there? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, he don't run the place. I do. She said, I opened this high school. He wasn't around. And it was true. She was there the day the high school opened. And I said, well, I don't have to sign up for it. I go to get my schedule from my counselor to sign up for some of my classes. Guess who had signed me up for debate one and it had her signature on it? Miss Beverly Billingsley had signed me up. I couldn't believe it. I never told my mom what happened till like 15 years later. I'm not kidding you. I'd never told my mom. And you know what God was doing? I was running from what God was trying to tell me to do. Now, I was young. I wasn't like just saying no to God, but I wasn't exactly saying yes. And God used my mom to watch that and say, you know, I think you need to do that. And God used a Cajun debate teacher from Louisiana teaching in Arkansas to have me read King Arthur so that I would be in debate class and get past all that. And I want you to know, my first several debates, I woke up that morning wanting to throw up. I couldn't handle it. My hands would get sweaty and, oh man, it was terrible. And then I would get this thing that we would call cotton mouth. I don't know what you would call it, but it's where you get that white stuff in the back of your throat that you never get except when you get up to speak in front of people and not, there's never enough water and you're like, excuse me. You know, it's just a terrible, terrible moment for you and you think it couldn't get any worse than this. And you know something in my life? I've had several of those moments where God's tried to push me and God's tried to say, this is the direction. I'm like, because that is not comfortable for me. It's going to take effort. It's going to take me risking something, and I don't like that. It calls me out of my comfort zone. God never calls us just to be comfortable. He's going to rub up against you and make you have a little bit of a life change. And that was the moment in which God sent me to the depths, man. I was running. I was on my way down to Joppa. I'd caught my ship to the other side, and I was trying to fool my mom. God knew it the whole time. And he was like, And he let Beverly Billingsley hear me read King Arthur, and the rest was history. We went on, me and my debate partner, at the end of that year, we won the state debate tournament. Uncanny, unbelievable. Still to this day, I look at that little trophy and I think, this is absolutely stupid. Only God could do that. And you know something? In your life, there are certain things that God is calling you and asking you to do that you're going to say, no way, I'm not doing it. And God's not going to just make you good at it. He'll make you great at it. But a lot of us are like, no, I'm not doing that. You're like me. You know, I'm not taking part in that. God has a way of dealing with us. I want to share with you a story. When shepherds are dealing with sheep, which is what Jesus would always compare us to, you know, he would say, you know, I'm the good shepherd. And he says, my sheep know my voice and hear my voice and follow after me. Okay. And he would tell several stories about shepherd and sheep. And as he uses that symbol and uses that picture, for a lot of us, we're like, what does that mean? I'm not really around a lot of sheep in downtown Cleveland. You know, I don't see a whole lot, you know. Occasionally I go to the petting zoo and they're stinky and, you know. But they're sheep and they're kind of nice and kind of cute certain times of year, you know. And you're like, hey, those are kind of cool. The sheep are about the dumbest animal on the planet. You know, when Jesus compared us to sheep, yeah, we're nice and cute and stuff, but we're pretty stupid. Because it's absolutely true, and farmers will tell you this, sheep will literally, if one of them goes off the cliff, they'll all follow along. They do, because they're stupid. So while Jesus compared us to sheep, you know, and we think, oh, that's kind of a nice little comparison, he was also pointing out that sometimes we're not too smart. And the shepherd has to be there, not just to lead us to green pastures, but because we're a little bit stupid and we'll go off the cliff and all of us fall along going, oh, I think it's great. Ah, you know, well, little do we know. If you were to walk up on a shepherd doing this, it would freak you out. But this is the way that a shepherd deals with a sheep, a lamb who continually goes astray. A shepherd will watch the flock, but there's always, you know, one or two that decides they want to go off and do their thing, and shepherd will go over there and, you know, bring it back, you know, take his little staff and reach down and get him, pull him over, and keep pulling him over, keep pulling him over. And if after a certain period of time the shepherd realizes this is a sheep that's not only going to get himself in trouble, but going to get a bunch of other people and other sheep in trouble, let me tell you what the shepherd will do. The shepherd will take the sheep aside. The shepherd will take one of its legs, and he'll break that leg. And then what that shepherd does is that shepherd will mend that leg, knowing full well that the shepherd must now carry that sheep wherever he goes until the leg is fully mended. You think Jesus knew that story? Oh, yeah. Jesus knew exactly what that was all about. And here's what the shepherd knows. He doesn't want to have to break the leg because, number one, he doesn't want to bring it pain. But number two is he knows once he brings it pain, guess who has to carry it around? Talking about a bummer. It's going to be not so much fun for several weeks till the sheep can finally be. And you know what that sheep learns? I think I need to stay near the shepherd. Now then, if you were to walk up on that shepherd and you didn't know what was going on and you're going out to the little zoo, okay? And here's the little sheep that's always trying to get over into the lion's den, you know? And you didn't know about that, and you walked upon the shepherd, and you turned around the corner, and you're just having a great little day. And all of a sudden, you see that shepherd, crack. You would freak out. You would think, that is the meanest guy on the planet. I cannot believe that he did this. This is crazy. This is terrible. You know, and a lot of times what we do is we walk in on God breaking somebody. And we think, man, that's terrible. Look, God's just terrible. He's mean. He's ugly. He's hateful. He's just trying to get us. You know what God's doing is he's saying, no, no, no. I'm breaking this so that they don't kill themselves. I'm breaking this sheep so that that sheep learns to stay close. I'm breaking this sheep so that he doesn't destroy and she doesn't destroy others because others will follow. And if we were to walk up on that, we would say, this is the meanest guy in the world, when actually, he's the most merciful guy around. Because through the breaking of the leg, he's really showing great mercy. This is what God did to Jonah. Jonah, I'm going to have to break you. I'm giving you several chances. Jonah, at some point in time, could have turned around and never had to go through the whole storm on the ship and never had to go through being thrown into the ocean and never have to be, you know, swallowed by a great fish. He never had to do any of that. But isn't that where we usually have a tendency to end up? And the great thing, the great news, the great story, the redemptive quality of Christ and the redemptive quality of God is this. That in your disobedience, you're only one prayer away from correcting and going back in the right direction. Even in your disobedience, even in my disobedience, we're one prayer away from God correcting and saying, all right, let's get back going. Did you notice that when he finally prayed the prayer, then God ordered the fish to spit him out? I think a lot of us have been there. I'm sure you've got stories that you can say, oh yeah, man, now that I look back and I can see what God was doing. And maybe for some of you this morning, it's kind of an epiphany. It's kind of like, this is what God's been doing in my life. Let me encourage you to do something. During the dark times, when you don't feel like God's that close, he's closer than what you think, use that time as the time of growth. For Jonah, he will never forget the miracle of the whale, the miracle of the great fish. He will never forget it. And for you, you're going to go through some terrible, dark times where you think, man, God's just mean. He's terrible and he's breaking you. It just, oh, man, it's terrible. That is the time when you're probably closer to God than any other time in your life. It's not going to feel like it. I will tell you, it will not feel like it. But God is at work, and God is drawing you closer to him. Use that dark time as your time for growth. That's the time to get close. That's the time to cry out to God and realize that salvation only comes through him. And you know something? What I usually do is I exhaust all of my energies and all my means to fix something, just like what Jonah did. And then at the end, Jonah says a powerful statement. He says, I turn to God because he is my salvation. What did Jonah try to do the entire time? Save himself. He was trying to save himself. And he finally realizes, you know, I can't do this. I live that life more than what I should. And you may live that life more than what you should. God is your salvation. There's nothing you can do that's going to fix and solve all the problems that you're going to face. Only God. Only God. I want everyone just to bow their heads, close their eyes this morning. I think all of us have been in that time where we've either run from God or maybe we weren't even just out and out saying, no, I'm not going to do something, but we really weren't saying yes to God. And we just kind of drifted a long ways away. And we just get to this point where we realize, wow, even though financially I may be doing well and friendships seem to be going pretty decently, why am I so miserable? I'm just absolutely miserable. And maybe you need to look around and see, have you been listening to God? Are you just kind of doing your own thing? Are you refusing to do what God's called you to do because, well, you just feel like you're busy? Or maybe you just feel like somebody else will do it. Or maybe you just absolutely don't want to because you realize that there's going to have to be some changes. And I will tell you, it is not easy. But God has a way in his mercy of breaking us, of saying, this is the right direction. Any other direction destroys you. And in that mercy, he's breaking you so that you also won't lead others the wrong direction. And maybe this morning you just need to go before God and just say, God, I've been running. I've been going down. And maybe I came to church this morning and, you know, maybe I'm just kind of trying to get you off my back a little bit this morning. And maybe I'm just kind of searching. But God, I've been running. And even though a lot of my parts of my life may be going well, I just found myself miserable. So God, I need you this morning, just like Jonah did, when he turned to you and said, you are my salvation. You're my only hope. And so Father, help us to remember this morning that even in our disobedience, you're just a prayer away. And that you want to restore us. You want to bring us back. You want us to give us a joy-filled life and not a miserable one. That you're not there to be mean and hateful and ugly, and that when you break us, it's really out of your mercy that you do so, not because you're angry, but because you know what's best. And so, Father, help those this morning that are going through some very difficult times. And Lord, you know exactly who those people are, and I'm sure there's people in this room that I don't know their story, but you do. And they're just struggling. Life is not what they thought that it would be. And Father, my prayer for them is that they will turn to you this morning. That they will join up with other believers who can encourage them and cheer them on. Cry with them when they cry and rejoice when they rejoice. And Father, I know in my own heart and in my own life that there's been so many times where I've kind of followed you halfway. not an out and out, I'm not going to do something, but just not really putting forth the effort. And yeah, I'll show up at church and occasionally pray or occasionally even read my Bible, but or just kind of float. I'm not anti-God, but I'm not exactly following you. So Father, forgive me where I fail you, and forgive me where I just kind of give a half-hearted response or a half-hearted effort. And Lord, I pray for everyone in this room this morning and those that will be listening over the internet. Lord, you know their names, you know their heartaches, you know their hurts. Father, that you would just be near to them this morning, that they would sense you, that they would realize that sometimes storms in life come, sometimes the big fish comes into our life, not to be mean to us, but out of your mercy. You send the great fish to swallow us so that we will realize that our only hope is you. So, Father, we give you our lives. We surrender. In Jesus' name, amen. If you're new to us, do us a huge favor. Fill out one of those connection cards. Put it in the popcorn box. But for all of us this morning, where are you in your relationship with God? Are you just kind of floating along, kind of doing church? Maybe you've been really running and you've kind of given church a chance. You realize, wow, I've really gone a long ways from God. Even in your disobedience, God answers your prayer. He'll bring you back and set you on the right course. Just one prayer away from a 180 and going in the right direction. So I don't know where you are this morning, but I just want to encourage you this morning, hang in there, because life does throw you a bunch of curveballs that you will not hit. But surround yourself with people who are going to encourage you. Surround yourself with people who are going to weep with you when you need to weep and rejoice with you when you need to rejoice. Because I'm going to tell you something, Sherry and I have needed those people the last 3 or 4 months. It hadn't been easy. There's just times that I just want to say, good grief, God, we're down here trying to plant a church. It's a good thing. I wouldn't think that's a bad thing. And yet every single turn, it just always seems the hard road. Everybody said, isn't being a parent wonderful? Like, no. I don't tell them that, you know, unless they're my really close friends, because then they think you're a freakazoid. Like when you see your kid screaming all the time, what's so great about that? Am I supposed to go, oh, it's great, man. I love to see him in pain. This is the joy of my life. This is wonderful. No. That's authenticity. That's the way that it is. It's sometimes the way that life comes. But as someone said to us the other day, you know, sometimes the sheep have to take care of the shepherd, and it's absolutely true. We all need each other at some point. And I love it when somebody comes to me and says, man, God did this great thing in my life. I had some of our people come to me and say, man, after you prayed with me and, you know, job wasn't going so great and everything else, and all of a sudden, man, I've got more than what I know what to do with. Now, I can't pray magic prayers over you, okay? Don't think that always works, okay? Sometimes it gets worse, and I'm like, sorry. And then they're like, I don't know what to do. I'm just like, God, shut it off. Too much, too much. And so I can rejoice with those people. And at the same time, I get the next phone call that says, lost the job and it's not looking good. And I would encourage you to let you know, don't do life alone. Don't do life alone. Because there are going to be those curves that, man, you can't hit. You won't. I just really want to encourage you this morning, whether you're running, whether you've been drifting, or maybe you're really close to God, but man, it's still a dark place. That God's there for you, and we are too.